This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Great to be here in Florida. I'm just a little north of Miami. I'm at the Diplomat Hotel, which is the Michigan official hotel. Kind of crashed their party to hang out for an hour. And I've got Craig Ross. I've got Seth Fish. I've got Brian Cook with me as well. They are back in Ann Arbor or in the Ann Arbor area or Southeast Michigan and joining us now. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing great.
Hey, I see that Craig Ross has joined the Church of H Squared with his Hassan Haskins jersey behind him there. Welcome. Let's all say our devotion to the extra 2 yards he gets every single play.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Nasternak gave me that for Christmas, and I was happy to get it since I'm a huge Haskins fan. He's one of my favorite Michigan football players ever, so good gift.
Yeah, we've had a lot of time spent on this show, whether with you guys or with Mike Spath and others. Man crush on Hassan Haskins has definitely happened a fair amount. Brian, how are you this morning on this day before the Orange Bowl?
Well, I don't have any clothing that's appropriate to wear in Miami, so I'm a little concerned. I have t-shirts, so that'll be okay, but I don't own any shorts. I'm not a man who owns shorts, so I'm going to just tough it out, I guess.
Yeah. All right, so to answer Jimmy Whitner's question, the game day forecast is going to be mid-80s tomorrow. It'll be in the mid-70s or so by the time we get to the game, and then it should be obviously the sundown kickoff, but it should be in the around 70 degrees for the game. Should be beautiful. It's beautiful down here. So let's talk about it, guys. It's been a week or, it's been longer than a week now. It's been 2 weeks since we talked to you guys. So how are you guys feeling heading into the game now that we're 24, 28, whatever it is, hours away from the game? 36 hours, I'm losing math time. Go ahead, Seth.
I mean, I've been talking to some Georgia fans. I did not realize how 2018 Ohio State, that Alabama game was for them. Like, they got their hearts ripped out, and they are not at all confident. I mean, they think they're going to beat Michigan, but then they think they're just going to get creamed by Alabama again. They think that this is their fate. And, like, they are where we were 2 years ago. They're just like, what's the point of anything? We're never going to be allowed to win this. And I mean, you can try to coach them through it, but the feel of these times, this, we never put really much into this. We literally use a cat in our previews for intangibles. But I mean, there might be some intangibles going on at this just because, like, Georgia really did kind of, they thought they were going to win it all, right? They're like, this is our chance. This is when we're going to win the SEC. And they weren't just, you know, they didn't just lose. They lost everything that they hung their hat on. They lost. So, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, along those lines, I mean, it just popped into my head is, you know, how much does the country really want to see a Georgia-Alabama rematch? I mean, if Alabama pummels them again, people will turn off, even if they watch it in the first place, people will turn their sets off, you know, late in the first quarter. And if Georgia, let's say Georgia might sneak by and win 21-20, how comfortable are people going to be in saying, oh yeah, they're the national champions? Or will they say, nah, we think Alabama's still really the national champions? And so, I mean, I think the public is probably not overwhelmed by the prospect of this game.
At that point, Georgia would have two big wins on their season, so they would be able to.
Win the championship game, they are the champs. The interesting thing, and this is a very unscientific measure, I admit, very, very, very unscientific measure, but at the restaurants that we've been to so far, maybe I'm just talking to Florida people, but they're all like, oh, Michigan people, we want you guys to win. And some of it has been anybody but Alabama, others anybody but the SEC, and then a few Florida people. Yeah, anybody but Georgia. So there's actually, I think, more than we're used to having people rooting for Michigan in a game. We might actually have it because, yeah, there's a lot of different reasons why people don't want to see Georgia advance. And I'm all for it. If everybody wants to support us, why not, right?
Was that your waitress by any chance?
No, it was a waiter.
Was his tip reliant on whether or not he was a yeah?
No, it was not. There was no reliance whatsoever on that. So, all right. So, let's get into the game. Let's talk football. Talk football. Michigan, Brian. Let's get into it. Let's talk about Michigan's offense facing that Georgia defense. How would you attack them?
Well, you have to hope that there's some non-linear stuff going on because when they finally faced an offense that was actually pretty good in Alabama, they got torched. And if you look at their schedule, you know, that Clemson win where they put up 10 points and hold Clemson to 3 doesn't look that great anymore because that offense turned out to be unfathomably bad given their talent level. And then the rest of their schedule, the best team on it is probably Kentucky. And so this is a really good defense putting up historic numbers, but they came up against Bama and they just couldn't hold it down. And Michigan leads the country in explosive plays, right? That's not a fluke. That's because they have Blake Corum. They have good downfield shots from the quarterbacks. They have a good scheme. So you have to hope that when these linebackers get in space with Blake Corum, that Blake Corum is going to win some of those battles. And I think that they're going to be able to do that. And the other thing that jumped out to me when I was looking at the stats is this is not a team that really is going to put you in long yarded situations when you run the ball. So they're very good at defending the run, don't get me wrong, but they don't get a lot of tackles for loss. They don't get a ton of stuffs on third and short. They're decent in those categories. They're not great. So this is a situation where I feel like if Michigan can get Hassan Haskins to contact a yard or two downfield and Haskins is able to grind out his Haskins yards, then you are able to run your play action stuff, get tricky, and not put yourself behind the eight ball on second long. So I think that's going to be really key, just Haskins being able to get those 2 extra yards and keep Michigan on schedule, and then that'll open up the ability to take shots. And they're going to need to hit shots to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, a few things. One, I guess, is a question for you guys, and I'm not sure if this means anything, but I don't know what happened last night or if there was a game, but so far the SEC is 0-4.
Correct.
In bowl games, is that right? I mean, Texas Tech got clobbered by Mississippi State, or Texas Tech clobbered Mississippi State. Auburn lost to Houston. UCF pretty much dominated Florida, and Missouri lost to Army. And then you had Minnesota beating West Virginia, and Maryland just clobbering somebody.
Virginia Tech.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's sort of, I think, perhaps bodes well in the game. The one thing I can say about Georgia, I went back and watched the Kentucky game, the Tennessee game, and half of the Florida game. And the one thing about them that was impressive to me on defense was they tackle. I mean, there aren't a lot of yards after contact in the games I saw. So, and that's something that's been a staple for Haskins, and in particular this year. And so it'll be interesting to see if Haskins can grind out his ordinary 1 or 2 after being hit, because that's not something that Georgia gives up. The other thing that struck me about Georgia, and I don't know how relevant this is in the first quarter of the Tennessee game, they gave up almost 170 yards of offense. Not much after that. And it was mostly on read options. They don't play the read option particularly well. But that's, of course, something that Michigan doesn't really do at all with McNamara. So I wonder if there's some greater possibility of seeing a little more of McCarthy in the game to run read options. Because and in the Florida game, Florida was able to move early some using read options. So while it isn't our thing, it's something they don't do well. I think it is hard to run the ball through the A-gaps on them. I think, you know, if you're going to try and pound it there, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, I think they're 2018 Michigan. The defense, other than when they tried to play quarters against Alabama for some reason, even their fans can't figure out why they switched their defense around for that one. But the they normally play cover one. They'll try to put eight guys in the box. They are great up front. I mean, if you imagine Ryan Glasgow being 6'6", 340. But, I mean, Jordan Davis, like, he only plays half the game because he gets winded. Michigan's not going to go tempo and be able to keep that guy out there. But, I mean, Michigan does have long
run the ball. But I want to ask you a question. I don't throw this because you brought it up. So this is, it's not about going tempo, but what about just putting out a personnel grouping where you don't change personnel? It's not about going tempo. It's just that if you don't change personnel, they don't have the opportunity. And because you have it in the arsenal, oh, they're changing, we're going to run a quick play. If they're not changing, you're just keeping them on the field for 3, 4, 5 plays if you don't change your personnel. Why? It's not necessarily tempoing them as much as just forcing them to keep him on the field.
They could do that. We were talking yesterday, though. I think they just need to trap him. I mean, Michigan has not run many traps this year, but they have very big guards. Zach Zinner moves people, and that's, I mean, something Harbaugh certainly knows how to run a trap. So yeah, I would.
Sam brought up the San Francisco 49ers game where he gave the big slap to Jim Schwartz after the game.
Uh-huh.
He brought up that game, and he said they trapped Ndamukong Suh all game.
Yep.
That's the example he brought up, and he was talking about that exact thing that you're talking about. For an example for this game.
Yeah, because that's what Jordan Davis does. He gets upfield. And the other thing is that their weaknesses, I mean, it's weird because their corners are both like super blue chips. Both of them are top 25 national recruits. But Kelly Ringo and Darian Kendrick are both big, kind of big guys, and they'll try to jam you at the line. And Alabama got free on them. And I mean, Alabama speed is Alabama speed, but... You know, Roman Wilson can run. Cornelius Johnson can run. Michigan is not slow at the receiver position. So, I mean, I imagine that there's going to be some Ryan Day-like stuff in the offense to attack them. And I think that's probably the best way to move the ball against them. Hassan Haskins, we go back to him because he gets 2 yards every single time, right? So if you deliver him to N'Kobe Dean, who is... They're Devin Bush, right? That's the direct comparison to that guy. But you deliver him to Kobe Dean, he's going to run over that guy and get, you know, 2 or 3 yards after contact.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we see a game plan on par with the game plan that we saw the last few games of the season, where Michigan has a flea flicker in their bag, has a halfback pass in their bag, has... plays designed to get the defense, first of all, burned and then hesitant. So getting those explosive plays is going to be win or loss. And I think the other thing that I think Michigan is going to be spending a month doing is figuring out rules in the Georgia defense and trying to have Harbaugh come up with ways to screw with them, put guys in the wrong gap. We saw a lot of that when Harbaugh was first here, and we haven't seen that much of it now. But against this run defense, I feel like you can't just expect to play the mano a mano without some sort of hijinks. And I'm just talking about, you know, traps, counters, these kind of things, not anything that is going to pop out as particularly unusual to a layperson, but just various techniques that Harbaugh has used in his career to put people in the wrong place and mess up run fits. And they've had a long time to put some stuff in, and I expect to see some stuff.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, go ahead, Craig.
Oh, there was just one other thing is sometimes you see teams that like to run plays that they can't defend or have difficulty defending. And the one thing that I saw on the Georgia tape was my surmise is they don't like defending wheel routes. And they don't like defending wheel routes when there's a tight end dragging across the middle. And I think that's something Michigan can do. I think they can get Donovan Edwards out on a linebacker and drag a tight end over the middle of the field. And I think that's something that can work for Michigan against that defense. So we'll see if Michigan uses any of that in the game.
It's funny you mentioned that because I brought that up to Graham Coffey, who is the Georgia guy for SB Nation. And he was like, no, you don't want to run wheels against us. Our linebackers are the fastest in the country. And I was like, well, doesn't that kind of get those linebackers out of the middle? And he's like, yeah, that makes sense. So the one play that's really worked against them is Durham, which is two wheel routes, right? That's a that's one tight end going on a wheel, or then another tight end going behind him, or a running back going behind him. That messes up their entire system, because they're, I mean, they're basically a man system. They're basically very similar to what Don Brown used to run, and that ends up kind of messing up their fits, because their linebackers are responsible for the quarterback and the running back. And if you take out the running back one, the other guy is kind of caught between, do I let the quarterback go or do I run with this guy? And that moment of hesitation is, you know, all Donovan Edwards might need to get that step on him.
Talking to our MGro Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider and on Ticket TV on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, and online at WTK.com. Ira Weintraub down here in Florida at the Diplomat Hotel, which is the Michigan team hotel. There's a lot of maize and blue walking around, people hanging out at the beach today. The team, obviously, the day before the game, they're in they're way deep in prep mode. But it's nice being here, and I got to see my guys back inside Southeast Michigan. I know Craig's heading down to Florida a little later today. And,
so is Brian, I think.
I am.
Yeah. And so, Brian, looking forward to seeing you guys down here as well. So anything else on the offense before we flip over to the other side of the ball?
I don't think so.
Brief thought is that what I sort of found the Wisconsin to be a reasonable comparative to the Georgia defense. Maybe not stylistically, but in terms of ability. And I'm not sure, really, that the Georgia defense is a whole lot better than the Wisconsin defense. And that heartened me. And that was in games that I felt Tennessee and Kentucky and Florida, where they, you know, won fairly easily. So after watching the tapes, I felt a little better, actually, about Michigan's opportunity on that side of the ball.
Well, that goes back to what Brian was saying, because the way we beat Wisconsin was big plays, right? There was the flea flicker that broke that open. So, you know, Michigan's going to have to – Michigan probably does need to get a few, you know, hit their downfield shots, break Corum into the open once or twice. That's really their – you're not going to score a bunch on Georgia. They're a great defense, and they're sound. I mean, the Don Brown system works unless you get completely out-talented, and – you know, I don't know if we have the ability to out-talent them more than once or twice this game.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's flip to the other side of the ball as the Georgia offense is going to try to attack the Michigan defense. And the first part is to talk about their quarterback situation. Kirby Smart just spoke, was it yesterday, the day before? My days are kind of all blurring. But he said Stetson Bennett's going to be the starting quarterback. But that doesn't mean that JT Daniels won't be ready to go. But I know, Seth, you've gone through this a lot, watching the film and going over the X's and O's and stuff. What have you seen out of their quarterback, and what do you think out of that position overall?
Stetson Bennett is kind of a weird guy for a walk-on, because he's pretty athletic. He's not tall, but he's a, you know, you get him on the move, and he can actually hurt you in the run game. Alex Drain is the guy who watches the film for us and these things. He compared him to Shea Patterson. That's a pretty good comparison, actually, because his deep ball sucks. He hits him sometimes, but if you get him rolling out, if you get him a little bit under pressure, he loses his mechanics really quickly. And he's really best at just kind of staying within the offense, right? If you can keep things simple for him, keep things in front of him, and Georgia wants to run 80% of the time, they would be very happy just to kind of run the ball down our throats, which is probably a good matchup for Michigan, except for the fact that their running backs are dynamite. James Cook and Zamir White, both of those guys are, you know, Cook is, we are familiar with him in Orange Bowls because, you know, we face his brother Dalvin, obviously, and he's the same kind of passing threat, and that's probably more the biggest danger. I don't think JT Daniels is going to play. I know that he was, but he's had arm issues all year. He just got out of COVID protocol, so he missed the last couple of weeks. So I imagine Bennett's their, you know, their guy for the long haul here. He's, you know, he's what we thought Cade was at the beginning of the year. Let's say that.
Yeah, so they run a ton of play action. They run the ball a ton. Straight dropbacks are pretty rare for him. He's usually given one or two options that he's seriously checking, and then he's locking in on Bowers as tight end a lot, which is, I mean, he's a great player. But there were definitely a number of throws late in that Bama game where the ball was just going to him, despite the fact he was triple covered. Made some great throws there, but also, like, probably someone else was open, you know? So he's a guy who Georgia has really wanted to protect. And when you put too much on him, especially when he gets a little sped up, he will make bad decisions. So, I mean, Michigan's challenge here is to put Georgia in obvious passing downs and let Aiden Hutchinson go to work. Because those tackles, they're 6'4", right? They're not tackles. They're not the kind of guys who are going to be able to compete with Aiden Hutchinson if he's given free rein. Now, I expect that they're not going to pull the Ryan Day and have Aiden Hutchinson go one-on-one every down. Yeah, he's going to get chips and stuff like that, but then you can't chip both defensive ends, right? So Michigan has two first-round picks on defense here at defensive end, and if they can get him in passing downs, I don't think those are going to go well for Georgia, because I don't think they're going to be able to keep Michigan off of Bennett. Once you move Bennett off his spot, he gets very inaccurate, and his decision-making goes out the window. So if they can hold that run game down, which is an open question, I wasn't expecting Michigan to do anything positive against Travion Henderson, but except for a couple of tempo plays, they pretty much blew him up. If they're able to do that against Georgia, I mean, this is going to be a slugfest where there's just not a whole lot of scoring.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Bennett is, I think, a bigger, I mean, again, Georgia to me looks like a slightly better version of Wisconsin on offense. You know, Bennett is probably better than Graham Mertz because he's more of a run threat. But otherwise, that's sort of and their running backs are a lot better than what Wisconsin had this year. But again, stylistically, they're sort of similar to me in that they want to pound the ball. And they don't want to throw the ball downfield much. And Bennett, from what I saw, really does not like pressure. If he's got pressure, he panics and makes throws that are inaccurate. I don't think he's a particularly great thrower of the ball, except that the pocket's completely clean and he has lots of time. Which often happened in the games I watched, but anytime there was pressure, he sort of collapsed. Now the guy Bowers is phenomenal. I don't think we've played anyone nearly that good this year, but to me, I mean, this is a team exactly as Brian says. If you can get them into pass downs, because their running game isn't controlling, I think you have a good chance of turnovers. You have a good chance to get the ball back for sure, because I don't think Bennett is a particularly good passer, and certainly not a drop back passer. But as Brian says, they tend to roll the pockets. So, although he does throw reasonably well moving left, which is an unusual trait. So,
can I just point out real quick that you guys jumped all over me earlier this year when I said that Georgia was Wisconsin in a weaker division?
Is that right? Did you really say that? I'm sorry.
And that was a hot take, but
well, it was a good one.
And it was also
Wisconsin in a weaker division. We beat the champion of that division 42-3.
Sure. Yeah.
If we beat the champion of Georgia's division 43-3, I will agree with you.
Okay,
and I will be very happy.
That's where we need to get to. But they are very comparable. That was a hot take when I said it. But they are comparable to Wisconsin in a lot of ways. Their passing game is very tight end focused. Their receivers are just guys, provided George Pickens doesn't play. George Pickens is he's the kind of guy who can take the top off your defense. He's a very high recruit and played really well last year. This year he's been pretty. I think he had a ACL.
His ACL in the spring,
right?
He got a little bit of playing time in the last two games that they played. He's had another month to recover. Who knows if he's going to be available? He also went through some COVID protocol. Who knows what he's going to look like if he is available? But yeah, he is an X factor because he is miles better than their other receivers.
Right. So I mean,
go ahead, Seth.
So that's the scary thing. The other thing I wanted to bring up is that because Brian mentioned that their tackles are basically guards. They do bring in. They've got like a number 5 overall recruit last year. In Broderick Jones, and last year being 2020, but his like they bring him in at left tackle and then move Salyer inside. And I think that's the look they're going to have to use for Michigan. They don't run very well out of that look. But, I mean, if you got Aiden Hutchinson coming, you can't sit there with just a guard. And if they're chipping Hutchinson with a running back, that takes away the best part of their offense. So, I mean, that would be a huge win for Michigan if that's the only answer they have for that.
Right, especially because the other guy they would chip with is the tight end.
Right.
Right. Right. So they don't.
Please chip with your tight end a lot. We would love that.
Really don't want to do that stuff. So.
All right. So one of the questions that's obviously lingering over this whole conversation is about Dax Hill. So all we can say right now on the show is that we can confirm that Dax Hill's status for tomorrow night's game is uncertain. He has not been ruled out for the game. So he has not been ruled out for the game. And Jim Harbaugh is going to speak to the media coming up in, I want to say, about 2 hours. I might have the time wrong. But Jim Harbaugh this morning speaking to the media, he's going to get asked that question. And he'll have an answer. Until then, we don't really have a any kind of confirmation to give you an answer. So, but we will ask the question. I'll ask you guys the question, with or without. How do you, what's your best defense? How do you try to handle that tight end to try to slow him down? Because he is a really dynamic player, and Bennett's obviously his best weapon.
I mean, with that guy, you just cover him and hope that they don't hit the butt zone, right? Like we saw with Jake Butt, guys like that. There's just a spot that you can't cover, and it's a pretty narrow spot, but. If you're able to hit it consistently, you're going to get yards. And so the thing for Michigan is to try to make Stetson Bennett so uncomfortable he's not able to hit that spot. Because he's not going to hit that spot unless he's got the ability to sit back in the pocket and throw on rhythm. So that's the way around it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason the NFL loves this kind of tight end. Because there really isn't an answer. I mean, if your quarterback can put it where only he can get it, he's going against safeties or he's going against linebackers. Either way, it's going to be a mismatch. That's what a tight end gives you. That is what it is. If you have Dax Hill, normally Michigan kind of uses Dax against the slot receiver, but Georgia runs a lot of two tight ends, which means Dax is going to end up on him a lot. If you don't have him, I'm guessing they'd bring Rod Moore down to play the nickel. And then if they're using two tight ends, they're just going to use Michael Barrett. Barrett might actually be the best answer for him. Barrett did pretty well against Cade Otton. That's probably the best tight end we've faced so far. He did really well against Wisconsin, against Barry Alvarez's grandson. And I mean, Cade Otton from Nebraska, he locked him up pretty well too. So I think that is that's probably your best chance. If you want to just one-on-one him, but Michigan's not going to one-on-one him. They're going to, they're going to do what you do in the NFL. You cover him like you cover everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, there is some smoke that there's a little bit of smoke out there that Hill will play. No, I don't know.
We'll let the confirmation. Yeah. We don't need to spend time guessing one way or the other. We'll let Jim make an announcement, or we'll find out, I guess, at game time if they don't make an announcement.
Oh, Harbaugh's
not. We'll all remain optimistic. He may not say anything, but he'll at least get asked a question, and we'll let him answer it because I don't have a confirmation of an answer at this point. So
while we've been on the radio, Sam tweeted out that Coach Harbaugh said that Hill's status is questionable. We'll know more today on whether he'll be able to play.
Well, there you go. So maybe the press conference is going on now. As I said, I knew it was this morning. I couldn't remember exactly when. As we were live on the air, I'm down here in Florida, and our guys are back in Michigan. We've got Brian coming down later today. Craig's coming down later today. It's going to be a really big party tomorrow night in South Florida or wherever you're watching the Orange Bowl. It should be a lot of fun. Last question I have for you guys in the Orange Bowl to talk about our defense and potential mismatches. Craig, Seth and I were talking about this during the break. I just want you guys, Brian, Seth, Craig, I want you guys to, comfort me or the fans that we will not end up in a Mike McCray on Dalvin Cook type situation in the game tomorrow night.
Well, they run a lot of zones, so I think that'll be a primary approach when they motion out running backs. But also, Junior Colson is a guy who I think is going to be the one motioning out. They'll leave Josh Ross in the box for that. Junior Colson is much better suited to run with a Dalvin Cook like person than Mike McCray was. So that's what I got for you.
Yeah, that was my answer.
It's comforting. Yeah, it's comforting. And I kind of knew the answer, but I've had a lot of people bringing it up, especially because we've heard the name Cook mentioned a lot during the preview, obviously because Dalvin's brother's on the Georgia team. So I just wanted to throw it out there. People have been mentioning that to me, so I wanted to throw that to you guys
there,
as well.
There is a danger because Georgia uses a lot of two tight end sets. We didn't even talk about Darnell Washington, who's 6'7", 275 or something. I mean, he's like a he's a crazy beast. Brian, I don't know how you pulled this last night, but you remembered Seldon going against him.
Yeah, well, there's it's in his recruiting profile. He was at the Army game or the whatever game, and they got him matched up against Darnell Washington on a fade, and he managed to climb the ladder and break it up. So he's the secret weapon if you got Darnell Washington out there.
Right.
Washington actually hasn't caught many balls this year, has he?
He hasn't, but this is a situation where it's like a bowl game. Yeah. So you want to break tendencies. You want to do some stuff that you haven't done before, and you also have the ability to like level up a guy who hasn't had a whole lot of impact on your offense.
Okay.
But I'd be looking for him pretty much exclusively in the red zone, because I would be shocked if the tight end targets weren't all going to Bowers.
Yeah, it's not about the target so much. John Fitzpatrick's their other tight end, who's just really a straight-up blocker, but a good one. But my point is, if Georgia's playing two tight ends, Michigan might go to their 5-2 look, which they did use against Iowa a lot, because Iowa was a two tight end or tight end and a fullback kind of sets. And in that case, Michigan's defense does end up putting that outside linebacker on the running back, which could be a bad setup. Especially if it's Jalen Harrell. That worked against Iowa really well, but I don't want to see that happen against Cook.
Well, I'm sure.
All right, guys, we got to get to it. We're going to wrap up this conversation on the side of the break. Plus, maybe a basketball note or two, as Craig's going to be at the basketball game tonight in Orlando before he heads to Miami. So we're going to get to that as well. And, of course, final thoughts as we get ready for the Orange Bowl. Tomorrow night, 7:30 kickoff. Pre-game coverage starts at 3:30. Actually, your game day coverage starts tomorrow at 6 a.m. Sam and I live from down here in Florida. Ms. and the Playground crew are going to take over at 10 and carry you up to the Michigan women's basketball game at 11:45. After the women's game is over, we're going to come back to Ms. and the Playground crew until 3:30. Then we'll get you going with the key bank countdown and kickoff, leading you up to Michigan versus Georgia in the Orange Bowl down here in South Florida. We're going to come back on the other side of the break on the radio side of things. We're going to stay with Ticket TV as we take this break, but more of the MGo Blog Roundtable on the other side here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the Ticket.
So, Ira, where are you going to be broadcasting from?
So tomorrow morning, I'm going to be, Sam's going to be at the media hotel, and I'm going to be at my hotel from 6 to 9, but I have to leave at 9 because we are heading, and anyone that wants to join me, if you're watching and you're in South Florida, American Heritage School tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. is right down the street from where we're staying. It's in the plantation area, is the pregame rehearsal for the marching band. That's at 10.
Okay.
So we're going to do that, then we're going to go find a place that has Big Ten Network at noon to watch the women's game, and then we're going to make our way to the stadium. That's our plan.
Sounds like a reasonable plan.
Oh, and there's President Mark Schlissel walking by here at the Diplomat Hotel here down in South Florida. A little play-by-play.
Hey, I like Schlissel. I know he's not a fan favorite, but I like
him. I'll be sure to tell him. If I have a chance to tell him, I'll be sure to tell him.
If you do, tell him that. That I hope he stays.
Well, he's not. He's.
I know, he's not. But tell him to change his mind.
No, don't
That's
do that.
Not happening. That's not happening, whether him not changing his mind or me telling him that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I think David Mendenhall, there it is. Where does it go? David Mendenhall, here you go. That's what most people believe. Yeah,
that's probably the general.
Well, I think that, but not of any sort of...
Yeah, Eric, I heard that, man. Feel better. Hope it doesn't hit you hard.
I have a weird story about him. Wow. When you guys were all... you guys were on the Diag in the president's house protesting against Dave Brandon.
I was just an observer. I wasn't like...
I don't know. From what I heard, you were the actual ringleader.
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly the sort of history of this, is that this was Brian Cook who did all
Well, now
this.
Brian can set the record straight. We're a lot straight. We're live on video. Set the record straight, Brian.
I actually met the reporter who interviewed you, who said that she had to stand on a couple bags of equipment because you're so tall.
Brian is
not that tall.
It's pretty tall.
I mean, I'm tall. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not like Mutombo.
Well, yeah.
Tall. Stand next to me. You're going to look like a giant.
That was her MGo blog story. She's like, I had no idea how tall he was.
My favorite part of your personality, Ira.
That I'm short, that you're taller than me.
I look amazing standing next to you.
Yeah. years ago, we were doing a Grill Wars event in Ipsy, and we had Sarah Murray on to talk about the Veda Murray Fund. And Sarah, if you've met her daughters who are volleyball players now, Sarah's very tall. And Sam did the entire interview standing on a chair. Still one of the highlights of his time at WTK. Mainly because it was a wooden chair that could have collapsed at any point in time and never broke, thankfully.
Anyway, Mark Schlissel, at the time you guys were doing that, was meeting with my Jewish organization over here in Detroit. Because you know he was doing the rounds and meeting everybody, and I didn't speak. And I was like, please, nobody tell him that I cover Michigan. And he said to them, he's just like, I showed up here and like I was, you know, I was not expecting to talk so much about football my first week here. Like these,
yeah,
probably not a good comment you make whether there's anything happening or not. You should probably always expect me to talk a lot about football when you first get the job at Michigan or Ohio State or USC. Or
I don't think he quite understood how deep it goes for a premier academic institution that everyone wants to talk about.
Wave, the athletic department. Hi, wave. Say hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay, you can go now.
Wait, aren't we doing women's basketball next? Bring her back.
Oh, she could break it down.
She could speak more intelligently than I can about that.
Adult says she's my insider.
If we want to break it down, we can. I was gonna have Miz do that. No, we just have the coverage tomorrow. That's what Miz and the crew. We're gonna talk a little men's basketball coming back on the other side. I want Craig to give his thoughts on the game he's gonna go see, and then we'll get back to football. Obviously, as there's kind of a big game tomorrow night, and I do like the fact that I've been we're in Michigan still, so people aren't gonna talk a whole lot of smack. I haven't seen a whole lot of Georgia. Not that I've been in a place to do that, but also the people that are like working down here, the people that live here, they don't seem to want Georgia to win. I kind of like that. It's very rare.
I mean, that's their rival, right? Like Florida's the
Florida's
the Michigan State to Georgia.
There's only one school here.
Florida's also like
there's probably people in the Big Ten who don't want Michigan to win.
Oh, we know that Ohio State and Michigan State are not rooting for Michigan.
Right. I mean, they're rooting for Georgia.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. Ira Weintraub down here at the Diplomat Hotel, which is the Michigan team hotel and fan headquarters. The alumni group is down here staying here. We saw the president of the school walk by. You can hold your comments on that for later. But I got my guys back in Southeast Michigan, Brian Cook, Craig Ross, Seth Fisher, as we continue here on the roundtable. Coming up tomorrow night, or excuse me, tonight in South Florida, or is it Central Florida? Michigan versus Central Florida at 7 o'clock. Craig, you're going to be at the game in Orlando tonight. You excited to go to a game, road game? What are your thoughts on tonight's game?
Well, it's sort of crazy. We're flying to Orlando, going to the game, and then driving from Orlando to Miami in the early morning. So it'll be a long traveling day. I'm embarrassed to say I haven't paid much attention to Central Florida. Maybe you guys have. I'm not really sure what sort of a team they have. Usually they're sort of a competent basketball team with some size. But I've been more focused, and I went back and watched some of the Michigan games this week, particularly the Minnesota game, which I found bothersome coming on the heels of two pretty good games by Michigan. I mean, Juwan had said a few weeks ago that he was very concerned about Michigan's turnover rate, because it has been extremely high. But then in the last four games now, it's gone down. And in fact, against Minnesota, we only had eight turnovers, which is pretty good. Problem was Minnesota only had four. And right now, the last time I checked KenPom a couple days ago, we were number 333 in the country in turnovers received. In other words, we're below average on our own turnover side, but we're right near the bottom of the country in creating turnovers. And a question for Brian and Seth is whether you think that and Ira, whether that's random, whether that has something to do with how we're playing defense. And a connected thing for me is in the Minnesota game, and I've never seen anything like this. Maybe I mentioned it last week. Was Minnesota had 29 baskets and two assists.
Yeah.
You know, which may again be more stylistic than anything else, but I'm having a hard time sort of wrapping my head around both of these things.
Well, a couple things is that this is definitely a feature of Juwan Howard's defense. So Michigan's turnover rate forced under Juwan Howard, 320, 336, and this year they're at 332. That's just the way they play defense, and that's a perfectly valid approach to defense. It keeps you out of foul trouble, and they had the number four defense in the country last year, despite being one of the worst teams in the country at actually forcing turnovers. So there were a lot of compensations for that. And then the Minnesota game is just indicative of the fact that Michigan right now is a horrendous isolation defense basketball team. So that's based on synergy numbers, and synergy numbers are only concerned about if you make the shot. So they're like sixth percentile or something in that. And I think that is probably going to level out here because, you know, that Minnesota game, they hit a lot of crap.
They hit some terrible shots that went.
Right. So like that, and that's going to happen, I guess. And I think part of that is bad luck. And part of that is the fact that Michigan, we expected there would be a defensive downgrade from Franz Wagner to Caleb Houston. And we vastly underestimated that. And they don't really have an athletic wing to check all those other guys who are slashers who go to the basket, right? There's no Charles Matthews on this team. So that's probably going to remain a vulnerability all year, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as it has been. And we're seeing some progress from Houston already. And last year we saw Mike Smith go from a major defensive liability to a guy who was generally in the way. And I think that process is underway for both Mike Smith and Devontae Jones.
Yeah. The good news about their turnover rate is it's probably going to go up this game anyway because UCF is terrible. I mean, you remember the game a couple of years ago. It was the Hunter Dickinson coming out party game. But they were one of the worst turnover teams in the country. That has not changed about them. Darius Perry is still their point guard. He is really the guy that, you know, that we're going to be worried about in ISO situations. He's tall and likes to go to the basket, which has been our issue this year is... You know, Jones can't really stay in front of everybody. Frankie Collins maybe a little bit better at it, but kind of, you know, still hasn't been good. And that's kind of, but he also turns the ball over quite a bit. And the other guys kind of do the same thing. They're not that different of a team. They've added, I'm going to butcher this name, but Sheik Mbake Diong as a center. He is a shot blocker. So that's kind of where I'm more concerned is that last time, you know, they were kind of undersized. They still have C.J. Walker, that Oregon transfer, who's a shot blocker too. But he's a little too small for Hunter Dickinson. Diong, he's just in there to do that. He's just in there to block your shots and be tall.
Well, yeah, if you look at his numbers this year, he looks like a pretty intimidating shot blocker. But if you go back to full season stats from UNLV the last couple of years, he's not really in the same class as Ike Obiagu or the Arizona guy. So
you guys are just showing off with the name pronunciations. Congratulations.
I mean, anyway, so they play Walker and Diong together a lot, and those are two non-shooters who play at the same time. The other three guys who generally play are very capable. So it's a game where you have to be really cognizant of who you're switched off on and if you can sag. So if it's any of the three guys in the backcourt, you got to be up on them. I guess it's pretty easy if the guy's not 6'8". Right. You got to be in their business. But yeah, they're a team that's going to be a little wild with the basketball, and I think that it's imperative for Michigan to get Hunter Dickinson many post-ups and then try to find out if they can surround him with some more shooting and sort of progress as we hope that they're going to be able to do over the course of this year.
Well, Hunter really has progressed this year. I mean, the two things we talked about where that he needed to do better was one, have some sort of a right hand threat, which we've seen a little bit of, and two, extend his shooting range, which we've definitely seen. And I mean, he is shooting over 60% from the floor while extending his range. So he really has made strides this year. But Brian's right. They really do need to give him some relief, surround him a bit by guys making some reasonable percentage of their shots, which has actually improved some over the course of the season, I think.
Well, there.
All right, guys, I gotta grab this up because we're wrapping up about 10 or so minutes ago. Jim Harbaugh did say, "Here's the update on Dax Hill." He said he is not currently in Florida. He's not right now. He might be. He could be here today. Maybe not. So basically, Jim Harbaugh said nothing is what we predicted he would say. Yeah. So there you go. Do you guys have a prediction on the game, or are you gonna make it somewhere else?
No.
I guess I have Georgia 23-20.
Seth.
Michigan 20-17.
I like Michigan 28-9.
Love it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it as always. Thanks to our guy, Miz, back inside the MDN studio. Sam and I'll be live back from Florida again tomorrow, 6 to 10 a.m. with the Michigan Insider. Our all-day coverage, game day coverage tomorrow for the Orange Bowl. Of course, kickoff for that is at 7:30. Thanks to Miz. Thanks to the Roundtable. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA Ann Arbor Accumulus Station.
Usually these breaks are full of intrigue and drama.
Is that true?
Yeah, you're always saying some crazy stuff.
You're telling me that's
true.
I'm intrigued and I'm worried about you, so that's the drama.